And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Visit DirecTV.com. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Plus minus.
Bang! Bang! Oh, what a shot!
Tim Kawakami deserves all the credit.
Plus minus.
That is a word right there.
I didn't remember what you said. What'd you say?
Fluffle.
Plus minus.
Yeah, like he, Marcus Thompson.
Marcus always tell the truth. Plus minus.
The only thing that I would say to Ethan Strauss is that he's a pretty damn good reporter. He's well
plus
respected.
Minus. I think he got the highest plus minus in the season in NBA history.
Welcome back to Warriors Plus Minus, to the very place that the legend Anthony Slater has predicted we would be all along. 66 games into the season. What's the record, Anthony?
33-33.
How many times have they been at exactly at 500 this year? Like 100?
Honestly, I believe it's around like 18, 19, 20 range. You know, it's funny. They just finished their last road trip 2-2. Remember their first road trip? 2-2. And it was always such a rocket. Like, remember that start with the two blowout losses and then the two wins? It's this winding path to 500 at all times.
I counted up 15 times at 500. Now I got to go back and recount it for a column for later today. Now you got me questioning myself.
No, I mean, you should recount it. I was kind of throwing that off the top of my head. It was somewhere around there.
I think it's 15 times, which is a lot. And yeah, it's like 29, 29, 30, 30, 31, 31, 32, 32, 33. Like, it's been a process in the last five, like exactly 500.
You know what this means? This means the Warriors are experts at finding their center, just like us on Warriors Plus Minus. We always know where our center is, and that's largely because we've got Tim Kawakami and Ethan Strauss keeping us level. Ethan, that is your job, is to help us always find balance. You accept that challenge, sir?
I mean, I've often been complimented for my just immense stoicism and leadership and even-keeled demeanor. It makes complete sense. In all seriousness, when you talk about how average they are, how they always come back to average, how they always regress to the mean, I wonder, you think about as many wins as losses, glass half empty, half full, where are we at when we look at this Warriors season so far? I feel like you could take it in a variety of directions. I think on the internet, the fan base would mostly beyond the glass half empty, and there's certainly a case for that, but I wonder where everybody else is at on this. Half empty, half full.
Well, I mean, I'm writing a piece about this today, so I've been thinking about it a lot. I think this is as good as they can be. I really like losing Wiseman and then Oubre actually didn't hurt them record-wise. This is like what they are. This version of them, probably a little too thin, so they could use another body or two. We'll see with Pascal and Lee coming back.
Why are people freaking out then, TK?
Like, you don't see the progression. That's the part that I think, whether fans are saying this or not, I think they feel it. Like, what's the progression? Where do they go from here? If this is Steph Curry getting 40 a night or they lose, it is entertaining. It's probably the maximization of what this roster can do, because James Wiseman on the floor more was not going to help them. And I think we've seen Kelly Oubre on the floor doesn't really help them that much. It's either here, you know, he's a guy who just kind of is out there. So you take those two off the floor.
He would have helped them on this road
trip. There are anecdotal moments when he helps them. There are anecdotal moments when he doesn't help them. As a depth, yes. I'm always going to give you that. Depth, yes. But a lot of things are depth. Guy making $14 million shouldn't just be a guy who could be depth. But
true,
let's just
but
move
Michael
past
Mulder's
that.
Getting about 24 minutes per game on this road trip, and that wasn't going
another too body well. Would help, but we're just talking another body. That doesn't work for me with Kelly Oubre. But this is the way they got to play to maximize Steph Curry's greatness, Draymond Green's abilities. This is it, but it's also 500. Like, I'll just put it this way. If Wiseman and Oubre were on this team for the last month playing, would they be a lot better?
I would just say they should be in the 6-seed mix. They should be in the 5-6 seed range. And, you know, we could point to a bunch of late game just gacks. Charlotte, Orlando, Portland, some lately that Pelicans game yesterday when they're just gassed at the end of the road trip. And I, you know, it's the reason why I wrote the story I wrote is it all kind of culminated in, wow, they're like, you know, they don't have to only have eight guys in this rotation. Gary Payton could have been on the road trip. I just think it's small stuff over the course of the season. It's the it's the continued change of direction of priority that has some fans frustrated. And it's a situation that I think understandably they've been twisted into with paying Klay Thompson $67 million to play 0 minutes the last couple of seasons and then all the injuries that have piled up this season. But it's also not terrific.
It's also how these type of seasons go, right? Like, this is what happens when you're a middle of the pack team. Like, things don't go right. It's why you're in the middle of the pack.
I agree with that, but it also seems as though the direction of the season changes or the priorities change, where it's we're trying to win, we're trying to make the playoffs. Then it's we're not chasing wins is a message the fan base gets, and it's developmental. And then it's get the hell out of here, Nico Mannion. We're shortening the rotation. We're trying to win some games. This is not developmental. We are trying to win right now. It's now the Steph show. Let's give Steph one of those Ricky Williams 600 carry seasons on a basketball court. And so it's just hard to know what the expectations are. And then I think, honestly, if I were to choose one reason for frustration, one reason in particular why people would see it as half empty, it's a guy who plays across the country. It's three syllables. It's LaMelo Ball. I think if LaMelo was worse, then people would be feeling better.
What we're seeing out of this, again, I don't want to give away too much what I'm writing, but this is kind of how they have to play. You know, they can try to do the two-man game with Curry and Wiseman. They can try to establish Wiseman on the post, which I think we all can agree did not work in his time this season. And you understand it's an extension of what they do, expansion of what they do. They do need another counter offensive threat when Curry is, you know, not on or he's swarmed. But they got to play like this. Like, this is Steph Curry at his best, and they're at their best when Steph's at his best. So is Draymond. And they need to fit Wiseman into this or figure out that he's not going to fit. And I think we're seeing Wiggins beginning to fit into it. Again, not as a feature guy. He's never going to be the guy. Klay Thompson moves into that spot, and Wiggins becomes a third, fourth guy. And I think he's just fine doing that. And I think he's happy doing that. Now the idea is next season, that's where the existential part of it. Can you fit Wiseman in this? And if you get a couple draft picks, can those guys fit into it? Or do you turn those young guys into some, you know, more veteran players, harder edged, stronger on the ball? We saw how soft they were with the ball at the end of the game last night. And just a little tougher to get in there alongside Steph and Draymond and presumably Klay. That's my big picture look at it. And I understand frustration. I just don't think if they had everybody healthy all season, so maybe they get to and they manage it differently. Maybe they get to the six, but so what? Then you're going to get blown out by who's the three? You know, Utah or whoever's going to be the three. I understand them saying this is not about like all the way about this season, but what are the things you can get out of this? My major thing I get out of this is they got to play this way, and James Wiseman's going to have to learn how to play this way, or else they're going to have to move him.
The one gripe I have is they probably should have figured out that this is what they needed to do from the beginning. The best universe for Wiseman was probably always going to be a very limited scope of responsibility. Rim run, rebound, and that's pretty much it. You know, maybe pop and hit a couple open threes. And you could have done that if you were saying, like, how can Wiseman help us win now? But after that, I mean, I like Eric Pascoe. I like Damian Lee. Those guys guarantee you that win last night? I don't know. I just don't know if, like, we've seen the full gamut of a season and they end up at 500. This is who they are. It's just who they are. I think that's fine. This is what many of us thought they would be. You know, it'd come down to the end. They'd have to have a run and they might have a shot at a sixth seed, or that's fine. I think the highest they could have gotten was five anyway. So what actually are we talking about? I think more a lot of this, what we've seen, has been a net positive because you found out that Steph is still a beast, right? Because you've seen Wiggins be able to play defense all year, because you see Draymond still able to lock in when he wants to, right? You know, you get an assignment like Zion in front of, like, I think you learned a lot this year, and now you make a run, like, they're in the play-in, you see how far you can get, and you call it a good season, and then you move on. I mean, I get the frustration. It's a lot of it is because there's some kind of, it seems like front office and coaching just ain't been on the same page all year. But I don't know if people were really expecting the four seed this year. Like, I mean, they're just on the outside of the most positive outlook of what could have been. Maybe five more games. Were they going to be a four seed? I don't see it. Maybe that's why I'm not that troubled by where they are. This is what it looks like when a team is in this spot. I bet if you go to all the other teams, you find all these same inconsistencies and struggles. Everybody who's in this boat, they look the same. I'm sure Dallas fans got the same feelings about Dallas, right? Like, you know, Memphis and all that. So,
oh, what are they saying in New Orleans? Like, oh, they finally didn't blow a final in the last 5 minutes of a game. Look, they've been blown. You know, like this happens to teams that are just don't have, you know, again, you're used to the Warriors having this massive amount of talent. They can close any game. They can be great for any section of any game. They don't have that. You know, they have a couple of really good players and everything else is kind of filler. And you, again, Marcus's point is exactly like when you run into a team that's got some good players but doesn't have a great record, these are the questions that are being asked about every one of those teams.
Ethan, at optimal efficiency, what are the Warriors win? If they optimize every single thing, where do they finish in the West?
Maybe four. I mean, that would be, maybe not even four. I mean,
that's the Clippers, right? That's the Clippers and
Lakers. Yeah, five.
You could be five because, if you just look at the records right now, the Lakers, Mavericks, and Portland's all bunch up. That's where they should be. They should be right in that mix with those guys right now. And I don't even mean optimization. They just needed to not gack away a bunch of wins.
Sometimes like it should be adding up to more, because if I'm watching a broadcast and I'm hearing, and it's not just Fitz, we're talking about ESPN, and they're talking about how underrated and good Wiggins has been, and how some of these role players are actually good, and then you have Steph at an MVP level, it does sometimes feel like it should be adding up to more than what it is. I would say that much. And maybe that's attributable just to the time Steph missed. I mean, how many games did they lose when Steph missed time?
1-7, right?
1-7, yeah, I think.
They were at a win percentage that would get you around 6 when Steph plays before last night.
It's also extremely naive to go into the season expecting Steph Curry not to miss at least 8 games.
That's one of the main reasons to short them, was just as we knew going in that without Steph, this team was completely hopeless. So it's especially bad when he's out. It just sometimes feels like the whole isn't greater than the sum of its parts, that it's not a collection of talent. Not only is it under talented, but it's not a collection of talent that really reinforces itself, I guess is the sense I'm getting. And the other thing we're learning is that they do not appear to be a Klay Thompson away from competing for a championship. They need more than that.
Maybe prime Klay Thompson, but not Klay Thompson coming off two massive leg injuries.
Yeah, they need something else. And so now we look and we assess right now on this road trip. We're talking about being without Oubre, but really a lot of it just seems like they're too small, and that hurts them significantly. They probably should have won that last game against the Pelicans. That was a heartbreaker. I think that we're going from big picture to small picture, but I thought that Jordan Poole should have played more last game. And he's not the most efficient player this season. Sometimes,
especially while Steph was struggling, that you needed, yes, Poole.
Kerr went to Mulder, and you can question that for sure. You can definitely question that. And Mulder, you know, is he going to make that corner three every single time? If he is, yes.
He doesn't make big threes.
No,
he doesn't make big threes. He does not. And when he made that last one in garbage time, you knew that was going in. Like when the game was already over, I was like, you knew that. You know that's going in.
Splash. Now doesn't mean that Poole would have made any, you know, made a difference because he was way off on his shooting. But he can make a play. Like, yeah, he can. And I think he would have been stronger on the ball on that loose ball at the end that was so pivotal. That was just not an NBA play by Mulder. That was not what an NBA player does. You get the ball there, and you know Zion's behind you, and you turn and you grab that ball. And Mulder just kind of left it loose. And
Zion is a monster, by the way.
He's a monster. He is so good. He is so good.
I love him. I mean, as a quick aside, he's so much fun to watch. He's such a great hope for the NBA. He gets to the free throw line, but not in any kind of floppy BS way.
It's not like a gimmick, right? Like, that's what you like about it.
It's a little like a way Embiid's getting to the free throw line, although Embiid's a little bit more theatrical.
Yeah, but Embiid's a little more savvy with the flops, but it's not frustrating. But the reason I mentioned Poole is just, if we're bringing it back from big picture to small picture, it feels like if you're trying to do both, you need to give Poole more minutes. If you're trying to do development and compete for that game, if we're Monday morning quarterbacking and saying, yeah, I think that Steve might have done it wrong right there, I think you need Poole. There needs to be some sense of progression going forward, because Mulder is not part of whatever this team is going to do in the future.
Especially not end of game. Like, you know, that's not your guy.
Although, you know, we notice when they take Curry off the floor in defensive possessions, he puts Mulder in. It's like, what? You're putting Mulder in for defense here? Maybe that's like if it's a scramble.
Long arms.
Yeah, long arms. And it's a scramble, and maybe they get a turnover and he can hit a three in transition, I guess. But that maybe tells you how they think about Poole defensively. Who's bigger.
Oh, you know, he screws up defensively. Yeah,
he does, and that's the reason
but
why.
But he made a couple plays, though. He made a couple good plays.
He's bigger. He's bigger, and you know, he can get his poke his arm in there.
Poole only played 13 minutes?
Yeah, he did not play much. He did not play much.
He's, like, not bringing him in until the start of the second and start of the fourth, so he's basically, like, erasing any possible first and third quarter minutes before even knowing if you have a good Jordan Poole that night or not, and that's what we have seen with Jordan Poole, right? I mean, a random night, he could be really hot.
And conversely, Bazemore is hot or cold, and that was not a good Bazemore night. And that's a night that you would have wanted to make that switch.
He rides with Bazemore, though. He's not. Bazemore's turnovers, he don't turn Kerr
this
off.
This is
like
it, though. They've committed to this, like, veteran-heavy, you know, like, mistake-prone identity, although, like, he's not playing Poole as much as he should because he's, like, fearful of, like, a soft defensive possession or something, which is not part of, like, this identity of this gritty eight-man rotation with JTA now, like, a heavy part of it, and they're all basically between the ages of, like, 26 and 33 or whatever, and then Poole's, like, kind of the outlier, and that's why he's not playing him, but at the same time, it's, like, once again, like, he should be, at this point, in the developmental minutes.
Yeah, I agree with Ethan. Yeah, Poole fits whatever you're doing.
Yeah, you should have Poole out there just because he does different things. But, you know, again, we're talking about micro. This is micro. Whether it's Michael Mulder or Jordan Poole in a couple 2 minutes there. But yes, I would agree that Poole is part of your future. He can do some things. I would have been, you know, more interested to see him out there than Michael Mulder at the end of the game. But, you know, it's. You know, then Damian Lee is going to be part of that. We're talking about kind of peripheral members of a rotation or members of a second unit that probably should get, you know, 10 to 16 minutes. Maybe Poole should get 24 minutes when he's playing very well, but certainly not guys are ever going to get 30 minutes. This is where the back end of the rotation, you know, it's where they're suffering. This is where the holes on their roster, you know, really kill them. You know, they could, you know, Mike James is not my favorite player, but he gets picked up and just starts firing threes in there. You know, somebody like that, a veteran like that could
Mike Gary James. Wow.
Well, I just saw him picked up. I don't like him as a player, but I saw him picked up and boom, 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 boom. He's making some shots. Gary Payton II would help this team.
Austin Rivers, Dwayne Dedman.
Austin Rivers. Yeah, there are guys that would help this team.
Oh, this is a new Mike James. Oh, okay, I was thinking of the old Mike James, like from
the little point guard.
Yeah, I was like, Mike James.
With that, like, slingshot, with that, like, slingshot three, I remember.
But, yeah, they've made the decision that those luxury tax dollars aren't enough, you know, to move, you know, moving to seven isn't worth it, if that's even possible. The percentage chance that another player would be valuable enough to pay for that tax. That's the decision they made. They're not going to win a championship this year. You can criticize it. I'm sure it should be, it can be and will be criticized. Hey, but we're talking about the periphery here. Like, we are talking about the end of a rotation of a team that's basically going to be 500 and maybe 37 and 35 at the end of the year. Like, what are the things we're seeing now that matter for next season?
Cold, calculated business decision. It for sure makes sense. It just doesn't feel all the way correct when you're watching Steph Curry just absolutely gas himself out to the finish line this season and then go, you know, you could have had another extra rotation guy or two tonight for a minor bit of prorated veteran minimum money.
But is Kerr going to play him? Is Kerr going to play him?
We've seen him play Gary Payton, who literally helped. So, yes, Kerr would have played. Gary Payton would have been better than Michael Mulder in that Pelicans game. I'm not saying they win the game. I'm not saying they don't. Though. Yes. He did play him. He played him in Boston on ABC Saturday night. He put him on Kemba Walker, and he played well. He put him on Buddy Hield when Buddy Hield was going off. Like, so, yes, to answer your question, it's helpful to have extra guys like that.
I think it is. I just don't know if he's going to play them dudes in the crunch.
And we get back to, I mean, the Smolagic roster spot is, we've talked about it. This is where it kills them because they're paying him. So in their minds, like, so we're paying this guy already. So to get somebody else in here to basically take his spot because he's not playing is going to cost Smiley Geach's roster plus the luxury tax plus this guy's salary plus the roster spot plus the luxury tax. Again, they make a ton of money. There's no question about that. This, we're talking about minutes that could really help the team in some form. But to get what? To get to seven, maybe? You know, maybe not. Maybe still be at eight. Maybe be at nine. For what? That's the calculation. And if you're already at 260 or whatever they're at, I mean, you know, I'm sorry, 190, whatever they're at, then it's hard to say, geez, what are you doing? When the mistake was Smiley Geach, the mistake was a few other things, or to have a player like Nico Mannion on your roster that your coach will play. And right now, Kerr will not play Nico Mannion.
I think the Smiley Geach situation has the potential to have more of an impact on the internal, just the internal dynamics of the team than anything in reality. It reminds me of in the really great book, Collisions, Low Crossers, where a New Yorker writer was embedded with the Jets, and it was those Rex Ryan Jets. And at some point, Rex Ryan, late in the NFL draft, drafts a guy who might have been Sanchez's tight end because it makes his quarterback happy, and he completely overrides all the work his scouts did that they do on all of those draft picks, all of those late round draft picks. Now, that draft pick probably wouldn't have mattered anyway, but it was the beginning of the end for Rex Ryan. It had reverberations. It was a domino that tipped over other dominoes. And so when I look at the Smiley Geach situation, I see it as having that potential where it is a sore point, where it rankles people, where it gets at this issue of the Lacubs and the nepotism, which we see in every franchise, right? You know, fair or unfair. And you could even say that Smiley Geach was a decent bet to take based on whatever was known, but it just has that odd potential to it to be more of a cultural impact than an on-the-floor impact, in my opinion, at least.
They got to rectify it now. Like, they can't. Like, this offseason, if he comes back and they're still waiting on this dude.
Well, he doesn't have a guaranteed deal, so that was the problem. You know, that was more than anything. The trade-up was bad, but the guaranteed 2 years, that's the killer.
I remember at the time, so they drafted him second round, which gives you a lot of maneuverability. I believe from my conversations that they were hoping to two-way him, put him on a two-way and, like, not start his contract essentially yet. But they couldn't do that because the hard cap. And the hard cap, remember how just like they had to count every dollar after the D'Angelo Russell move to make sure they didn't hit this certain amount. And part of that was like Smiley Geach's rookie deal was so small. It was like 800,000 or something like that. It was like almost beneficial to have that tiny of a number taking up one of the 14 roster spots. They didn't even have a 15th man. Remember, they couldn't even add a 15th man until like January. So I think that was part of the reason why they started the clock on his contract, gave him two guaranteed years. As far as this summer, his guaranteed date for next season is like a week into free agency, but you could push that back. I would presume that they're going to let him go to summer league as long as he agrees to push back his guaranteed date to past training camp. Probably go to summer league, probably just be a body in training camp. But I think we all would predict he's not going to go win a job next year. And since he has non-guaranteed money, that experiment will likely end. But what Ethan is saying is probably right. Like the stench of it may linger around.
The Smiley Geach stench. Wow. There we go.
Wow.
Man. Good job.
That
Slater.
Was
like
Anthony
that.
Slater coining that one. Wow. Wow. Okay.
I like the Looney Lane, personally.
That's incredible. They've got 6 games left. Is there any way possible they don't finish this thing 36-36? Or
yes, the Oklahoma City Thunder are about to hand them 2 wins. Yeah. So
they should go 4-2. They should go 4-2.
Then they lose Phoenix and Utah. So that's 2-2 right
then
there.
They split Pelicans, Grizzlies.
3-3?
37-35 is my prediction.
They should go 4-2. They should go 4-2. You know, again, they're magnetically attracted to 500, so 36-36 would surprise nobody. But you look at the way this lays out.
The 8th seed is what matters. I mean, regardless of what record it takes to get there, that last game against the Grizzlies might be for the 8th seed. But get on the 8th side of the bracket, that would probably give you either a play-in game in Portland, in LA against the Lakers, which would be interesting, or in
I don't know, like maybe ramp up those lottery odds, you know? Like maybe I don't know.
At this point you've played yourself into the play-in. By beating the Pelicans, you're in at this point. You can't tank below the Pelicans. You know, if you win the play-in, you're out of the lottery. If you can be the 8th seed, and if you lose both play-in games, you're in the lottery.
You can be the 7th seed and be in the lottery.
Yeah, yeah. If you lose both play-in games,
you know. You're the seventh
seed. There you go, Ethan. You're saying tank the playing games.
You get two home games, so you get two home games, and you lose both of them. So you get two home games, you get to say you're the 7, and you get to be in the lottery. Oh, there you go. We've just decided it. It's perfect for them.
And then, come on, NBA. You got to kick the Warriors a frozen envelope situation. I know the odds are long for them getting the number one pick, but look at your league. Look at the issues. Look at the numbers. Look at the numbers, Steph Ranks.
What will your Friday ratings column look like if the Warriors get no play in against, let's say, Doncic, and then the Warriors announce pregame, we're actually going to rest Steph Curry tonight? Mannion at point in the play.
Smiley Geach is our center.
If we are thinking about the TV stuff, by the way, what an abomination that ESPN Marvel broadcast of the Warriors Pelicans game.
I knew it wasn't going to be good.
What the hell was that?
It wasn't for you, Ethan. It wasn't designed for you, sir.
I watched it with the most open mind, and it still wasn't good.
Based on the numbers, it wasn't for anybody. I mean, I'm looking at, it was on ESPN2. It got 274,000 people watching it. That's test pattern on ESPN2. That's, you could put somebody's camera of their house, of their
video of this podcast on ESPN2.
Yeah, during prime time on ESPN2, you're going to get that number no matter what you put. That's just, they were doing the thing of like, hey, you know, a lot of people like fish, a lot of people like ice cream. Here you go. We got some sardines on your vanilla.
I mean, have you had salmon ice cream, though? I mean, Tara's organic ice cream, Mike.
Salmon ice cream? Ew.
We will be right back after a quick word from our sponsors.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
You remember when the Saints Bears, they put on Nickelodeon, the NFL playoff game, where it was like players were scoring and it'd be like the splash zone was like, yeah, I think they got the idea off that, because people actually were generally positive about the Nickelodeon NFL thing. No, this was weird.
I think the execution was the part that was weird. I don't think they had a clear vision of what to do, and it just became like Richard Jefferson talking about hero points the whole game and these terrible puns. Like, it was, my wife is big into Marvel Universe, right? And by virtue, like, I'm all over it as a result. I was expecting it to be actual comic thing. It was really just basketball with little graphics. That's what it was. It was just funkily executed for a person who was like, all right, let's see what you got. Let's see the Marvel element. I mean, the graphics, that's what it was. It was just a chance to put some graphics onto a basketball game. So no like cut. You know how like you expect in these like theatrical cuts in betweens, and you know what I'm saying? Just a bunch of stuff. Like, it wasn't. So if it's for kids, they really didn't have much for kids except for like smoke trails on basketballs when they shoot, right? So it wasn't executed well. And I don't know if that would have saved it, but at least you would have had a good show. Like a good show.
I might mention it in my TV column on Friday, but it's a good indication of who has the leverage when it comes to those two sides negotiating a new TV contract. And it isn't the NBA. That's the main takeaway, whether it's this or the aforementioned play-in games. Basically,
so you're saying Disney was like, yo, we're going to put Marvel on.
This is the way it's going to go.
Yeah, I don't think that was Adam Silver. I don't think that was Adam Silver calling up Disney and saying, hey, I got a great idea, guys. I kind of think that one goes
the cutaways. TK was like, yo, Kelly Oubre, what's your favorite Marvel character?
I was like, that creative.
Yeah, they're just asking players, what's your favorite Marvel character? It's like, what?
Those things are tough to pull off. I mean, that's the one. I mean, I knew it was going to be terrible because those are hard. Because they're two different things, two different creative mindsets, two different performances. And I love Marvel as much as anybody. I watch all the shows, and I knew that wasn't going to work. I just knew it. It was going to be forced. It was going to be overdone at best. You know, I don't want to sound like a 105-year-old person, but, you know, the NBA game's pretty good. You know, when the games are good, I kind of want to watch the game. I don't want to watch the graphics.
Well, that's what's frustrating. It's like you've got Zion versus Steph in a game that matters.
Steph going off. Yeah.
Yes.
I'm not sure they knew the game was going to matter. I think that's the problem.
Well, yeah, they didn't. They might not have known.
I mean, but I think they picked the two guys, Steph and Zion. They picked two of the most watchable guys.
They picked two who they could be like, these are superheroes.
Yes, absolutely. No question.
Yeah, it's you've got two guys where one is the future of interest in the NBA potentially. The other is just one of the main events, one of the main draws, and it really should be about the game. I don't think we're being old fogies in saying that.
The game was available, and I watched it on ESPN. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like they didn't.
You didn't watch it on the local telecast later? Oh my God.
But there's an opportunity cost. There's a big difference between Marv Albert, NBA and NBC setting up a game and making it sound epic with the musical intro and giving you this context and earlier this happened and now this might happen.
Where I can agree is it was not the NBA on NBC.
It shouldn't be the Marvel Cinematic Universe. It should be the Marv Albert Cinematic Universe.
Oh, that would be incredible. But like, imagine if Marv Albert was talking.
Baby.
Imagine if Marv Albert was trying to combine one of his intros and the pregame hype with also telling you about how this is a lot like the Little Mermaid or whatever was going on back then. I mean, it just, it's you got to make the game seem grand.
Ethan, you're just stuck on the TV that you watched growing up and you can't move on. Come on, you're tired demographic. Just won't give it up. Let the new people have a chance. Come on.
Can Michael Jordan rub the lamp and release the genie? Next. The NBA on NBC.
Ethan, what if those 240,000 viewers were all new viewers and the regular basketball folks watching on ESPN regular? Would that be a good thing if it was all a bunch of kids watching?
What if they were angry viewers asking where the typical log rolling that they watch on ESPN2 is at this time?
I need to see a 500-pound Swedish guy lifting a truck. That's what I'm into this channel.
By the way,
that
stuff used to be awesome midday.
Okay.
Nice save.
Tim asked earlier, you know, what we're learning or like the positives, I guess, to take away. Andrew Wiggins had a really good season. Durable, played every game, playing through bumps. The last couple games, he's really kind of seized that fourth quarter minutes. It's like two of his best stretches without Curry. And he is, I would say, like, would you put him as a top 10 wing defender in the league right now?
I couldn't believe it when Ron Adams was suggesting it last offseason. It's like, I guess if Ron thinks so, maybe I still don't get that because he was not good as a Minnesota Timberwolves defensive player, but he's been good. Like, he's into the guy, like, always into the guy. And then I said last night on Twitter, like, you can tell the difference in the Warriors when he's not playing. And that's, I did not expect that. I did not, they better put Wiggins back in. That's what I think about Steph. That's what I think about Draymond. It's not what I think about usually with Andrew Wiggins.
Brandon Ingram don't want to see him anymore.
Ingram did not want to see him.
Two great defensive nights against
Brandon. And that is a full credit. Again, Wiggins will turn around and go 1-for-11 and be invisible. I mean, we know those nights are in him. But he's had very few of them. And man, even then, he's played defense. Even then, you can see that he's just running. He like runs like Clay. Like, he just keeps running. You could play him 40 minutes. And sometimes Kerr does. That is is he worth $31 million? That you got to throw that question out. They've got him, and he helps them, and he's beginning to figure it out of like when he should shoot the ball, when he should just completely defer to Steph, where he should be when he does it. He's not great at it, but compared to his fellow Kansas alum, he's way better at it than he was a year ago, and that's been a big plus for them.
If nothing else, has he made himself far more desirable in the trade market?
I mean, sure, his value is higher than it was, but I'm not
his
sure.
Value is definitely higher.
The problem is his value on the market, it nowhere near matches his actual court value to the Warriors compared to what they would get on the market.
That $30 million for three more years, whatever it is, it depresses it beyond anything that the Warriors can get as in basketball value. They can't get this basketball value any other way. Maybe you could throw him in a trade, better if you're trying to get some megastar when you need his contract.
If you absolutely have to for salary matching purposes, and you convince the other team, look, he's at least at this point, he's going to provide positive court. You're going to pay him more than you want, but he'll provide positive court value.
Tom Thibodeau, you somehow find someone that's not even a team that works contractually, but some coach that believes that you'll get this out of him. Yeah, I think you could get more out of him now than you could certainly from the last offseason. But they're not going to do it. They're going to keep him next season.
I have a hypothetical, maybe it would be considered a hot take. Brandon Ingram is a somewhat potentially disgruntled, max player out there.
Jeez, Wiggins really did a number on him, huh?
Well, I mean, look, he's just it's been a bad season in New Orleans. Mix is not really working. You just saw it. My point is,
I don't want to get aggregated, but yeah, sorry.
It's not going well. I mean, that's not even debatable. It's just not going that well down there. I don't know if that means Brandon Ingram is going to be available or not. But my point is, as we search the landscape on potential obtainable guys out there for the Warriors, Pascal Siakam's obviously another name we've discussed. Ingram is one of them. You just watch that back-to-back. It theoretically, you would think they would have to go Wiggins, plus, probably this year's Minnesota pick plus another first rounder. It's Wiseman in the discussion, blah, blah, blah. And then it's you cut down to it and you go, how much would Brandon Ingram help than Andrew Wiggins is currently helping?
I love it. It's hard to get David Griffin to give away a good deal. He's going to try to squeeze every bit of value he can. So that would be one potential roadblock.
How much better would Brandon Ingram be than Andrew Wiggins? Is that even a smart deal? If Andrew Wiggins is a better defender, not nearly the type of score creator or shooter, like Brandon Ingram is just a much more accurate shooter. He's potentially he's something 48, 38, 90, something like that. But, I think the thought out there would be, yeah, for sure. You go Wiggins and all the picks that are available to you. And I'm is that the right value? We literally just saw Andrew Wiggins outplay Brandon Ingram two straight games.
Yeah, I don't know if that's what I would want to do, but I'm curious about maybe one of those deals where you can get him with draft picks and other filler, now that I'm thinking. Could you combine Ingram with Wiggins? Because that situation, I don't think players like playing for Stan Van Gundy. That's what I hear. I don't think it's the happiest experience. You're hearing about these rumblings with Zion and everybody else for a reason. It seems like there is some discontent, so maybe that's where you can be opportunistic. I like the idea of just bringing up Ingram because this is what the Warriors need to get back into the saddle.
We should add, though, that Ingram makes about the same as Wiggins.
But he's younger and he's, he's bigger, I think. It certainly looks bigger, but it's a great point by Slater. If you're the Warriors, you're not would you trade Wiggins for Ingram? Yes. But then you start throwing in these valuable assets, then now you've got to stop and think about it. And I don't know if you do. I don't know if you do. It depends. If you can get a pick that a similar player to Ingram with that pick, because I think we think maybe Kuminga, maybe Kuminga is similar to him. We'll see. So I'm taking the pick. I'm taking Wiggins in the pick. So that's a great point. I mean, after what we've seen, we know Ingram's value is way more than Wiggins. But if you trade Wiggins, you're losing the value. The Warriors aren't getting that value back. They're losing the value of what he does for them on the floor because of that contract. If you're willing to keep the contract and you can add another player who can be Ingram-like, I think I might rather do that and have Wiggins and that guy and Clay and Steph and Draymond and whoever else they put around. But to the point, that's a big step up for Wiggins. That really is we're counting. And I remember when Myers called it the core four and I kind of snickered, core four, you're counting Wiggins with Draymond, Steph and Clay who have won three championships for you. But Wiggins is moving into that place. Again, not as a guy you can ever just say, go get 35.
Yeah,
go get 35 tonight. But as a guy that you can count on, as a guy, he's not even Iguodala, but as a guy that they can say, we know we're going to get baseline this from Andrew Wiggins, and it's going to help us. And we don't have to worry about that wing defense that can kill you if you don't have it, which, remember, they didn't have at all last season. That's a big thing. That's a big thing to come out of the season with.
I think it's huge. I think it's a huge
knowing all our reactions when they made that trade. They're like, okay, getting rid of D'Angelo Russell is good, that they don't, they needed to move him. But Wiggins, couldn't you get more than Wiggins in a pick? And we all thought that because of his career with the Timberwolves. And other people said, no, this guy's going to be better than that. And guess what? He's been better than that.
So, Slater, you doing that deal for Siakam but not for Ingram?
So you would have to tell me what it is along with Wiggins. How much?
Well, you were saying the picks, basically.
Both picks?
Just the Minnesota pick, their own pick. Is Wiseman involved in these conversations? Because I'm sure Toronto would like start the negotiations figuring out how to
trade. Well, if Wiseman's in it, one of the picks ain't, if you ask me.
I would have to know what the actual package was. Because
saying, like, as a preference, who would you rather get, Siakam or Ingram?
Pascal Siakam makes like $31 million a year. And like, to be honest, he's not playing up to the level of that contract this season. Now, open market, contract for contract, most NBA teams, maybe all NBA teams, would still take Siakam over Andrew Wiggins. But that idea has tightened up this season. It's not as much of a canyon of a gap as it was. Where before the season, if you said Pascal Siakam's contract, Andrew Wiggins' contract, like how far away? That's so far away in market value. It's just closer now, which to me changes what you would be willing to attach to Andrew Wiggins. I wouldn't attach that much, to be honest.
I think Siakam's potential good buy low. That situation in Toronto, which isn't in Toronto, which speaks to how weird it is and how jumbled it is. You wonder how much of their funky season is just the result of this bizarre adventure they've been on in Tampa Bay. And maybe that's a good thing to target. And once a guy is back in a normal NBA situation, he returns to form.
Weren't we supposed to send Ethan to Tampa to do some reconnaissance, some investigation to figure out what happened with Siakam?
I mean, Nurse is one of the most media available coaches. You could get a lot of good quotes. That would be interesting. I would be down.
You love Nick Nurse.
I do. I do enjoy Nick Nurse's coaching. I think Kerr does as well and thinks he's innovative. And they've got a weird season, if people haven't checked it out, where their win-loss is so much lower than the point differential that it appears to be historic. It's one of those things where, is this bad luck or whose fault is this? They've got one of the stranger seasons going.
Siakam shooting 30% from three. Jeez. It's been a struggle. Yeah, I don't know.
Could you play Siakam at center? Like that would interest me. If I'm the Warriors and I guess
you could, I mean, you could play him next to Draymond.
And can you get away with it? That's one thing. Like this little run here without a center or Looney, it makes me think. Well, you know what? They can get away without a center for most. I mean, you still want to have guys who can play center, but I don't know that you need a center. Like I was thinking. Jokic and Gobert and Zion to some extent, like you got to have a center to compete in the West. I'm not so sure anymore. Ayton, you still need guys.
I still think you're doing the playoffs.
Yeah. You need bodies. You do need bodies, but I'm just saying, like, if you had, even if let's say they keep Wiseman and he's your backup, could you figure out a rotation where that works? And I think you can. I wouldn't have thought so before, but I think you can. In fact, I might propose it. Like, maybe they go into next season and Wiseman's the backup because you get him away from Steph more often than not, and you get him with Jordan Poole, and you kind of run that second unit and you let him grow there. Because I think the one thing I can't get away from in this season, as I look at it, as I write this piece, is how much Wiseman's presence dragged down Steph's efficiency. When he was on the court with Steph, Steph wasn't good. That's not Steph's fault. It was because Wiseman was dragging him down. For whatever reason, that's hard to get away from when you look at next season. Like, what do you do about that? Oubre did the same thing to Steph's numbers in a little lesser regard, but still, Oubre's probably not going to be on this team next season. I think Wiseman will be. What do you do about that? Because we've seen Steph just take off, I think averaging 35 since Wiseman's been out, whatever it's been. What do you do about that? And I think it's a fact. I don't know that it's going away. That's one of the big pictures I'm kind of wrangling with in this column and looking at next season. I think it's their most important thing they have to deal with. How do you fit Wiseman into this system they've got that maximizes Steph or do you try to change the system? I think they found out this season changing the system is probably not the right idea.
High pick and roll. It's pretty easy. 1-5 pick and roll.
Yeah, you can mix it up. You can play different styles. You don't have to play the same exact style. You know, hey, like you said, Wiseman's on the court, high pick and roll. Draymond's now the center, but you know, back to the normal stuff. I do think they're going to be very patient in Wiseman's development. I think that's going to be the message all summer because remember, he's coming back from a meniscus injury. We don't even know if he's going to be there opening night yet. So, you know, the bench idea is for sure. I think part of at least the early equation with him before they figure out, you know, what version of him came back. Did he advance even while being pretty inactive with his knee injury? Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a kind of like, again, they're tying two eras together, and this is the complications that come with it. But I think if they get another veteran center or even brought Marquise Chris back, to be honest with you, they'll be okay. They need a fuller, more veteran rotation, though, you know, along with Wiseman.
As I've heard from a few people, they need grown-ups, you know, the guys who just are tough on the ball, who can bump around, who can grab a rebound.
David West, a modern version.
Yeah, David West, Sean Livingston, you know, we know the names. We've seen the names. Guys who just are tough in critical situations.
Is Serge Ibaka even playing with the Clippers right now?
Like, he's had a back injury he's been dealing with all for like 25 games. He had a good season up until the point he was injured. Marc Gasol is an interesting name.
Marc Gasol would be really good.
He's been in and out of the Lakers rotation.
Be really good for them. But just guys who just, again, who don't crumble, and crumble might be a tough word because it's tough. It's a pressure situation. You're playing with really good players, but who you just feel good having on the court at the end of the game when Steph's getting double teamed, the ball's bouncing around, and someone will just grab it, take two dribbles, and make the right pass. They don't have enough of those guys. And, you know, should we, you know, they ask Michael Mulder and Damian Lee and want Toscano Anderson to be those guys. It's, I mean, Toscano Anderson's been it for a lot of this time. That's not who they should be. They need some guys who are, you know, who are meant to be those kind of guys. And we'll see if they can get them.
Bob's on the clock. Bob Myers is on the clock big time. What are the advantages from whatever they learn, whatever happens in the playing games and if they get in a playoff series? Is it simply just giving Steph and Draymond a chance to wet their beak in the playoffs again before next season? Or is there any type of benefit from them pressing and trying to get into the playoffs and maybe winning the first round? Obviously money, right, from the playoff games. Is there something that could help from a next year perspective from getting this team into the playoffs and in a good series and battling it out with somebody?
JTA in the playoffs would help. Jordan Poole getting some playoff experience would help. Anyone who will be around and doesn't have playoff experience, it is helpful to play.
Allen, Smilajic, playoff experience.
Yep.
Important.
No, I mean, I think more basketball is better than less basketball. I mean, again, you don't want to wear stuff down too much, though.
Yeah, that's the, you know, we've seen playoff injuries before. You know, we've seen different stuff.
I kind of feel like a lot of the playoff pressure comes from Steph. I think Steph wants to make the playoffs. I think he considers it a mark against if he can't take this team to the playoffs. So there's just the accomplishment itself that is hanging out there. But in terms of their big picture, I don't know if it actually matters that much. You have playoff-y elements of another team scheming for you to get acclimated with. But this is not the real NBA playoffs as we know them, where you're walking into a crazy...
Well, that's what I'm saying. Does it benefit them more than just like the obvious to really try to like to get into the playoffs, right? Instead of just doing the play-in.
Anytime you can see Steph go crazy, you know, any opportunity for that I think is good.
If they could bounce the Lakers... If the Lakers are in the play-in.
Now you're getting ambitious.
Oh, wow. There we go. We found it. Ethan's been trying to avoid the aggregation the whole time.
No, I'm just saying, if that happened,
the title, can you imagine if they won?
It's not the, come on. It's not the same level. It's not the same level of accomplishment. It's improbable. Maybe you could even say it's Miracle on Ice level improbable. I don't know. But it's not the requirement of marching all the way to the NBA Finals and winning it to potentially bounce the Lakers if they fall into that bracket. And
you're talking
LeBron's
just like a 7-8 play-in game? Yeah, I mean, you would bounce them down to an elimination game, and then it would be interesting.
I just think the anticipation of what Steph could do in any moment like that, do-or-die moment, is fun. That's fun. And they want to recapture that. They haven't really had that. They've had moments in the middle of regular season they haven't had. Well, what if this happens? And man, wouldn't that be cool? I don't think they're going to pull it off, but if just that anticipation, just that feeling of buzz is valuable to some extent. Doesn't matter for next season, you know. I mean, yeah, so you can point to, you know, have sit and watch the game with James Wiseman and say, hey, here's what the playoff looks like on TV, right? I mean, it's not that big a deal, but
I mean, it was, you know, for Phoenix though, right? Like it helped
last season.
Got Chris Paul.
Yeah, the bubble.
They got Chris Paul.
No, I mean, but I think people know
the Warriors. It was the bubble.
Yeah, I think people know what the Warriors are at this point. I mean, they've at least established themselves as credible this season as opposed to last season.
I want to return to my scenario, right? Because it's a small sample size. Goofy things can happen at a small sample size.
If you ain't saying if the Warriors upset the Lakers in the actual playoffs in the 7-game series, then it ain't even that great of a point.
Oh, but come on. In a play-in setting, if the Warriors eliminated the Lakers?
Like Slater said, they just bump them down to the next bracket. Like, it's not even a full elimination.
It's not even that great, I guess.
Don't be scared. Go with it. All right, they get into the playoffs and they beat the Lakers. Go. Start there.
That's not going to happen.
They steal game one in Utah.
There you go.
Rudy Gobert is having issues in the pick and roll.
They go
Steve
right
Kerr commits to it.
Right at Rudy Gobert. Andrew Wiggins, pick and roll, attacks him.
4-2 upset. They got Denver in the second round. Jamal Murray's out for the season.
Having issues.
Jokic is tiring. Kevin Durant is looming in the East. Durant in Chase Center, NBA Finals this season.
Oh, there you go. There you go.
Andrew Wiggins up against the emerging superstar.
So will we all pitch in on a book, or would I do that by myself?
That would be quite a book.
It would be quite a book, wouldn't it?
You're on book number three, man. You're like Stephen King over here.
I'm not on book three. He's done book number three.
Done.
He's probably already writing book number four at this point. Yeah.
More likely odds, the Warriors lose in the play-in and win the NBA lottery and get Cade Cunningham, or the Warriors win the play-in and win the NBA finals.
Cade Cunningham is more likely. Cade Cunningham is way
Cade Cunningham is definitely more likely.
Especially if you believe in frozen envelopes. Especially if you believe in incentives.
The Warriors end up with number one and number four out of this draft.
We'll know somebody's reading them Ethan columns on Ring.
We're not messing around with this whole TV deal. We need to get this trade going the correct direction.
We need to get Steph back to the top, man. We've been reading Ethan like crazy.
I mean, it would swing a lot. A lot of audience, a tremendous amount of audience if the Warriors go into next season with the 1-4 pick. That would be very interesting, I would say.
And then just trade 1-4 to New Orleans for Zion. And then you got all the ratings set
up. You got it, yeah.
There you go. Done.
Would that be the best thing for Bob? For Bob Myers, 1-4, is that like, all right, you're gonna get somebody good, or after having number two and then not going the best? Does he want
one and four pressure? They want one. One is fine.
That's a lot of pressure,
yeah.
Baby.
Yeah, four is a little different, but one is fine. I don't think one is a problem. But like, you don't have to worry about one. I think Kate kind
Jalen
of
Suggs, right? Jalen Suggs, right, Slater?
Oh, now it is a controversy then. You got local columnists already calling for Jalen Suggs.
No, Ethan says trade the number one overall this year for some team that's going to get the number one next year.
Now that would become
Mr. Holmgren.
Ethan says they have two number one picks already because they still have number one selection.
Jessup.
I tried my damnedest during that weird season last season, abbreviated and everything else, to figure out who would be good. My picks do not look good right now. I'm for trading just because of that. Just like, I don't even want to make a judgment on these guys.
Killian's been playing better recently. He's actually been playing.
Passing great, not shooting great.
He's only Detroit's third best first round pick.
Shots.
It's a tricky one. It's a lot of pressure. I think with number one, it wouldn't be as much pressure because no one's going to criticize you for taking Cunningham.
The pressure would come if they is like people saying, like, do you trade? You know, like, think about the value of that pick then. You know, do you really take a home run swing? There'd be probably a lot more interested teams going, well, maybe now our superstar is a little bit more available.
But I think you keep that one to keep.
Giannis for the one?
By the way, by the way, we've concocted a super unrealistic scenario, so let's hit the reverse.
We concocted two of them.
It's only like a 1% chance or whatever it's going to be that they win the lottery. And really, we should think the NBA is on the up and up after we saw Zion Williamson go to the Pelicans instead of the New York Knicks. That was
the time for the frozen envelope right there.
Oh, yes.
And they
that envelope should have been that envelope should have been chilly. That envelope should have given frostbite in that particular scenario. But they were on the up and up.
Zion may, take his reality into his own hands pretty soon, though, it seems.
That's what Ethan says.
Did you see his quote
after
the Knicks game?
Yes. I think Ethan saw that one.
Slater, what are the likely scenarios at this point where they pick?
So Minnesota obviously is playing well. Me and Ethan have both written about this. They're, I think, up to like fourth or fifth worst record in the league right now, with the chances, I think, get up to maybe even sixth worst, which would really kind of break open the scenarios. Like, every time they go up, it makes it a little more likely that the pick does convey, but it makes it a little less likely it conveys in the 4-5 range, which was the appealing part of them being the worst team in the league, is that there was a 60% chance they'd have a shot at like Jalen Green or Kuminga, or just one of those top five guys. Then, the prospect list falls off a cliff after 5. But it's becoming more likely they might get like 6, 7, 8-ish, and that's when we maybe start talking about like Davion Mitchell, a plug and play type prospect.
And the value, the trade value.
Could they take
the
that
pick,
the 6 or 7, and then their own and try to move up?
Sure. I mean, you could try a lot of
things. Is that too much NFL draft, TK?
Wow. You're going to take Trey Lance or Mac Jones with those.
That did feel a little NFL draft. But
I think the problem is, one of the issues of the Wolves doing well is that the better they play, the more the value of the pick goes down if you do want to trade the pick. Because if it conveys next year, right, then there's more of a belief that the Wolves might actually be good. So there's also that aspect that's a negative when it comes to the Wolves doing better in terms of the pick. And the pick is, there was some discussion and argumentation on whether the value of the pick is plummeting, but it's certainly gone down, I think, is what we can say. It's certainly gone down.
And you can't know, they're not going to trade until after the lottery, right? I mean, there's nobody's going to trade for an if. So you have to wait till the lottery, so see where it is. And the likelihood is it's 6, 7, 8, and I still might end up as 4. I think they're the third worst record right now, with a very easy chance to get to 5. But, they're still towards the bottom. And see where the pick ends up. And
they could get to 6, actually.
Nobody's going to know until that lottery happens. And they could be the 6th worst record and end up with 1, right? I mean, that could happen, and it doesn't convey. So nobody's going to – there's no way to make a move on this one until the lottery, and that's coming up. So, we can talk about it. We can talk about the probabilities. But, there's no way to know how valuable it is right now. No, zero way to know. That's why it's a lottery.
That's TK's way of saying we are done. What an episode of Warriors Plus Minus.
Best one ever.
He wants us to stop speculating on things that might not even happen yet, which means we don't have a podcast anymore. So for Slater,
let's
TK,
just stick on that Warriors win a championship probability scale.
I don't know. I like the Warriors getting the first pick or beat the Lakers for the title. How about that? Next week, there'll be 2 games left, and we will get to dissect how they split the previous 4. We'll holla. We'll be right back.